I told Wendell I was going to bring a copy of War and Peace and plop it up here. It is about fear, and that would scare you, so. My name is Loretta, and I am believing that my Creator is very involved and sees me and loves me dearly. And I'm recovering from depression and betrayal and abuse and addiction to food and shopping and codependency, etc. And I am going to, are these microphones okay or do I need to move them? Are they okay? Everybody can hear me? You're in the front row, Matt. You don't get a vote. Thanks. I'm going to read this lesson for your own protection. If I don't, I'll chase rabbits and squirrels and chipmunks and possums and end up in places I never intended. And I did write the majority of this several weeks ago on an airplane between Dallas and Salt Lake City, never expecting or planning to share it with the world. I didn't know we were going to be doing a series on fear. And I wrote it for myself to keep my thoughts in order or attempt to, kind of a search for truth. And I edited it this week and added and subtracted to protect the innocent. So here we go. Last week, Wendell prefaced the lesson with a story. He told you that as a child, he was afraid there was a tiger under his bed at night. Well, I too had crippling fears, as I think many of us did. I was deeply afraid of being sucked down the bathtub drain. It was legit, wasn't it? Yes, it was legit. My brother will vouch. When my mother pulled the plug at the end of bath time, I would scream and cry until she got me out. I had to get out before that loud, slurping vortex of spinning water sucked me away into some sort of dark, sea monster-laden world. She was eventually forced to keep a rubber mat over the drain so I would even agree to get into the tub. I'm happy to report that I have overcome my fear of drains. Victory! Thank you. That's all I've got. I also had a terrible fear of monsters in our bedroom closet. I shared a room with my twin sister. Every night my mother would tuck us in. She would sit on the edge of the bed and pray with us, kiss our foreheads, turn out the light. Darkness and quiet would fall. One night, just as we slipped into peaceful slumber, why is my brother laughing, I wonder? A hideous, ferocious, hairy monster leapt aggressively from our closet. It burst through both of the bifolding doors and came crashing loudly towards us. My heart raced. I screamed. The end was nigh. No, wait. What was it? It was my brother. My older brother. My much older brother. For years, I could not go to sleep until my closet door was closed. Under no circumstances could the closet be left open. Now that I write about it, I see this, of course, was pure ignorance. Why would a flimsy wooden door provide safety from the closet monster? Wouldn't it have been made more sense to fling the doors open as wide as they'd go so as to eliminate any hiding place for the monster and therefore undo his entire scheme to murder me in my sleep? But I couldn't bear the thought of facing him. I preferred to close the closet door, turn my back to it, close my eyes, pull the covers up tight, and hide. And that's been my preferred method of dealing with most of my fears, hide. Or as Wendell called it in his previous lessons, fight or flight. Aren't these two methods, fight or flight, just another way of saying deny? We talk so much about denial here, we routinely acknowledge the destruction that it causes. The first in the 12 steps states, we admitted we were powerless, we come out of denial. And over the past few years, through step studies, lessons here and pathway, and some soul searching, I've begun to realize how much I deny my fears, how powerless I am to defeat them. But it seems almost acceptable to deny fear. Aren't we taught to deny them? Isn't it shameful to be afraid, especially as Christians? Aren't we supposed to play that recording in our minds on repeat? I'm not scared. I'm not scared. We put Superman and Wonder Woman in front of our children, heroes for them to emulate. What makes them heroes? Is it their superpowers, or is it more about their fearlessness? They aren't scared of anything. Is that what we're supposed to imitate? Is that attainable? Is that reality? Of course not. It is self-defeating to attempt to achieve complete fearlessness, and yet I've tried all my life. But we're taught to think it's possible. I wish I had told my kids that a cape does not equal courage. I wish I had told them they'd always have fears and that it's okay. I wish I had told them I was scared too and that everyone has fears. I wish I had said, I know you're scared, just try it anyway. Not, don't be scared. Moving forward, despite your fear, asking for help, revealing truth, that is courage. There's no way around them, only through. A cape cannot camouflage cowardice. For long, anyway. Think about yourself. What are your greatest fears? I'm not talking about snakes and spiders. I'm talking about those fears that disable you, cripple you, suck the life out of you. What are those fears you keep hidden or attempt to keep hidden? The fact that every day you get up and face those fears and live in spite of them, that is your superpower. One of them, anyway. The fact that we put one foot in front of the other and keep on keeping on, that's courage. That's what makes a hero. My dad always told me I was brave. I was the brave one. And I remember thinking, I am. I remember feeling like I had him completely fooled, even as a child. I fought like mad to maintain that false reality. Inside, I was terrified, but nobody needed to know. It was my little secret, one I would fight to maintain until only recently. I thought that since I could go down the big twisty slide at the playground, jump into the deep end of the pool, pick up bugs, play with snakes, I was fearless. In these brief moments of bravery, I tried so hard to convince myself I had no fear, but denial is a powerful thing. In moments, I almost had myself convinced. But I started to realize that though I wasn't afraid of the dark, I was afraid of what you thought of me. I was afraid I wasn't enough. I was afraid of looking stupid. I was afraid of failing, whatever failure means. I remember getting up to sing a solo for the first time at church years ago. It took me until I was in my mid-30s to get up enough courage to do it. My knees were knocking together. I was completely terrified. I was hearing those voices in my head telling me I wasn't good enough. And the main reason I wasn't good enough was because I was afraid. I wasn't necessarily afraid I couldn't sing. I was afraid that you'd see I was afraid. I'm supposed to be that brave girl. The fact that I wasn't, that was weakness and cowardice and so embarrassing. How do I hide the fact that I'm terrified? It was no longer about hitting the right notes, but about hiding the fact that my heart was racing and my palms were sweating. The predominant fear became fear itself. It's true what they say. There's nothing to fear but fear itself. How do you never let them see you sweat? I haven't figured that one out, except for sweaters. This always helps. Sweaters help. I remember in public speaking class in eighth grade being told never to admit you're nervous. We must not fail, and we must appear fearless in our attempts to achieve perfection. It's completely exhausting. Why can't I stand up and say, I'm afraid, but I'm going to do this anyway? Why is that not acceptable? I believed for years that if I just fought fear aggressively enough, I'd soon defeat him. But the more I fought, the more it felt like I was the fly, and fear was flypaper. How many of us have heard these statements as children or said them to ours? I'll protect you. I won't let anything bad happen to you. I won't let them hurt you. I'll keep you safe. There's nothing to be afraid of. Most likely, these phrases have been spoken over us or by us in love out of a desire to take care of, not comfort, take care of, to comfort, to soothe. Are any of the statements true? Why do we say such things? Aren't we just attempting to deny the validity of someone's fear? Do we think we can will it away? We don't want those we love to be afraid. We don't want to be afraid. But why are we trying to deny the existence of fear and the very things that cause fear? It's kind of like when you're hurting and someone says, you'll feel better in time, or you'll be okay. What they're really saying is, please stop hurting because I can't bear sitting with you in your fear or pain. It scares me. We'd rather attempt to deny the reality of it. Don't be scared. You're making me uncomfortable. Now imagine God saying any of those things to us. I won't let anything bad happen to you. I won't let them hurt you. I'll keep you safe. I'm no Bible scholar, but I don't remember him saying anything like that.
At Pathway, I've stood up and owned or admitted my addictions and issues. Over the years at CR and then Pathway, I've learned that many, if not all, of my issues and addictions are born out of fear, and yet I don't stand, admit, or acknowledge my fear, the very source of my issue. Instead, I admit the result of that fear. My issues are the trees that grow in the soil of fear. Fear is the foundation, the root. My issues are the results, the symptoms, and yet fear seems to be a shameful thing, more so than an addiction or a hang-up. I've got to stop shaming myself for fears and instead openly acknowledge them and accept that I am loved perfectly in spite of them. It seems that my greatest fear is admitting my fears instead of saying, I'm a shopaholic. Maybe I should admit I felt less than as a child. I had a very wealthy best friend who had a closet full of beautiful clothes with tags hanging on them. And being a pastor's kid, we couldn't afford such things. I felt I didn't have anything pretty, that I was not pretty. I was afraid I was less than. I was afraid I wouldn't be enough. So now I shop. I'm trying to dig deeper into the cause of many of my issues. Why do I wrestle with an addiction to food? What fear is causing that? Why am I codependent? What fear is feeding that? That's another lesson altogether. We'll never learn the origins of our addictions and issues if we're stuck in the denial and shame of our fears. Now that I've admitted I have them, I'm trying to face them, to look at them square in the eye, to converse with the monsters and ask why they're here. We can never heal completely until we get to the root. It's like pulling dandelions. They have a really long taproot that's nearly impossible to evict from the surface. You have to dig down deep to unearth the entire root, or the dandelion will reappear. I'm slowly realizing that it's much less frightening to look directly at the terrifying things than run from them. I want to turn around, face them, acknowledge the reality of their existence, and step forward regardless. We've all had those nightmares about someone chasing us, and the more we run, the more terrifying it becomes. We begin to make assumptions about that thing that's behind us. In our minds, we create a hideous monster and yet never turn around to see. The monster grows as we run, and he's built on assumptions. Years ago, I watched an entire episode of Oprah on self-defense. Do not judge. I had 3 TV stations and 2 toddlers who would nap about that time of day. On the show, they were interviewing an expert on the subject of self-defense, who said that if you're ever being followed or chased, you should immediately turn around and face the person, look directly at them, and speak to them saying, "What do you want?" or "Why are you following me?" I'm not here advocating this method of self-defense. It sounds a little iffy to me. But that idea really stuck with me. When we turn and face that thing, that monster, we see the truth. That hideous monster chasing us is sometimes a stray puppy. Sometimes, however, it is indeed a monster. But how will we overcome if we don't even know what it is or pretend it's not there? We must face it squarely. I'm discovering that some monsters are born out of assumptions and nonsense. Some are real. Let's talk about the monsters born out of assumptions and unrealistic expectations. One way I can determine if I'm creating monsters out of my assumptions is if I find myself thinking, what if? If what if is playing on an endless loop, I know I'm heading into fear of my own design. The monster is something I am giving birth to. I'm creating him. What if is a fatal shot to the heart of freedom. I want blank, but what if? What if is just another way of saying I'm afraid of the possibilities. What if I can't do as well as the others? What if they reject me? What if I look stupid? What if they don't understand? What if I get sick? What if I lose my job? What if I say the wrong thing? When I start to do this, play the what if recording, my husband always says, "What's the worst thing that can happen?" That is just another way of saying, turn around, face the monster, and see if it's a puppy or the swamp thing. And then only then can I begin to deal with the fear. Stop denying. Sometimes it's only a puppy, shoo, but maybe the monster in the closet is only my brother. We're so happy we turned around. Now we can move on our merry way, but sometimes it is the swamp thing. Sometimes you may be facing the real possibility of a loved one dying or running out of money or losing something precious. Then what? How do I deal with the swamp thing? More on that later. The quote, "Everything you want is on the other side of fear," has sunk into my soul lately, and that's kind of what prompted this whole writing was the fact that I found that quote. I say it over and over again to myself every day. I say that to myself. Think about it. Fear is that ugly swamp thing, and life is on the other side of him. What do I want? Love? Love is scary. In order to give and receive, I must open myself up to rejection and betrayal, to abuse and grief. Love, true love, requires I lay everything on the table to be examined and explored. But don't we all want love more than anything? It's so worth the risk. But I must step through the fear, push past the swamp thing, get to the other side to find that good stuff there. What else do I want? I want to live life to its fullest, get out there, to step out my front door and into adventure and exploration. I question, wonder about, and long for the unknown, and yet refuse to venture into it. The last question in our last step study asked what we would do if there were no limitations. When I thought about that question, I looked at what my limitations were and came up with the usual list: money, location, time, physical abilities. But mostly, I was limited by my own fears. I'm not saying I want to throw caution to the wind or live recklessly. I'm not advocating the absence of common sense. I'm not going to parade around hilltops and thunderstorms waving lightning rods. But I've battled against hermit tendencies for years. I've spent most of my life inside where it's safe. Safe isn't what it's cracked up to be. And safe is a mythical place. My safe place was killing me. I was suffering from loneliness. I was unable to grow and learn from people and experiences. The curtains were drawn on my mind, heart, and soul. I was going to sleep. I thought that my shaky nerves about any situation were a clear signal to avoid it. If I'm uncomfortable, I better trust my instincts and step back. But for some reason, I started to realize I was missing out. I wasn't living. Why can't my fears and my adventures live in the same moment? Can't they hold hands and walk into life together? I thought I had to look my fears in the I had to lock my fears in the closet, get them under control, defeat them before I could leave the house. We couldn't let anyone see we had them. Well, the swamp thing always broke out and caught up with me. I'm starting to say, hey, swamp thing, it's time for our next adventure. Come on, it'll be fun. I'm tired of trying to defeat him. I'm tired of being ashamed of him. What's really weird, though, is the more he tags along, the less interested he seems to be in the adventure. Most often, he's choosing to stay home. So this is how I'm dealing with the swamp thing. I'm accepting his existence and taking him with me as I do life. I'm giving him a name. He's feeling less powerful, and I'm not hiding him in the closet. I don't want to come to the end of my life full of regrets. I don't want to regret not expressing love, affirmation, respect for others. I don't want to regret not trying new things, taking risks. What could keep me from those things? The swamp thing. I've always heard perfect love casts out fear. I'm still trying to figure out what that means. So if I knew true love, I'd have no fear. What? Why? People have said it to me for years, and I would nod and smile, yes, of course, with a big huh in my head. If I admitted I was afraid, it felt like I was saying I didn't believe in love, that perfect love that casts out all fear. Why am I still afraid? Am I not loved? What is perfect love? Have I ever really known that? Is it possible? It doesn't just say that love, the garden variety love, casts out fear. It's got to be that perfect love. I felt ashamed of my fear, because wasn't I supposed to be fear-free as a Christian? It wasn't until recently I began to let go of guilt and shame of my fears. I began to realize that I couldn't possibly fully comprehend perfect love. Recently, I was in a situation where I was extremely nervous. I was afraid of failure, of looking stupid, and I couldn't shake it, though my legs were trying. I was begging God to take away my fear. I was getting angry at myself for being afraid. I was wrestling and ashamed and frustrated. Then I had a very clear vision. I saw my Creator step up behind me and gently place his hands on both of my shoulders, and he whispered in my ear, "I'm here." He didn't say, "I won't let you fail," or "I'll keep you from looking stupid." He just said, "I'm here." He didn't say, "You're going to do perfectly and impress everyone with your skills." He just stood with me. And you know what? For some reason, in that moment, it was enough. I knew in that moment he is truly my father, the perfect father, and the only one who knows anything about perfect love. He wasn't saying what we as parents have all said to our kids, I won't let anything bad happen to you. Just, I am here. A calm came over me. I smiled. I was no longer concerned with my definition of failure. I was with my Creator. He had my back. He wasn't concerned with what others thought of me. And suddenly, in that moment, I wasn't either. I had a tiny glimpse of perfect love. Fear is like that bad dream when you're a child. When you wake up shaking, all you want is a loving parent to come and sit with you, hold your hand. Or when the playground bully wears you out, just the presence of a teacher or parent is enough to soothe you. Nobody is promising to off the bully, but you know you're not alone in facing him. There's a phrase in a song by Sarah Groves that has been one of my life's mantras. I live and breathe for an audience of one. Don't most of my fears boil down to fear of man, social anxiety, whatever you want to call it. We live as if all the world is our audience. We're also concerned with how we appear. We're not really looking at others anyway. Doesn't that mean that others aren't nearly as concerned with my performance as I am? My image is not really that important to others. Why do I think it is? My true audience is my Creator, and He adores me. He is proud of me. So here we go. Here's the formula, the protocol for fear's defeat. Nope. I wrote this to attempt to organize some of my thoughts. It's all a journey, and this is just a rest stop on the way. There's no resolution. Just own my fear and put one foot in front of the other. Extend grace to myself. Stop feeling shame in my fear. Realize that perfect love casts out fear, but that I'm human. I have a tiny mind, and I cannot fathom the depth of perfect love. God will reveal it to me in pieces on this side of eternity. But He created my mind and knows its limitations. I, for one, don't know how I'll be able to handle a perfect love. It's too immense to imagine, too vast to comprehend. But I can imagine there will be no room for fear in it, and I trust that. So I'm going to step outside. I'm going to take the Swamp Thing with me. I'm going to try to realize that my good, good Father is always there too, loving me perfectly. I will look for those brief moments of fearlessness found in perfect love, and I will not shame myself during those times when I can't see it. And I will look forward to the next time I do.